Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And good afternoon, Milwaukee. Welcome to the Final Inspection Show. Always a smooth transition, isn't it, Jeff?
Always. Absolutely.
Jeff Orlowski, of course, joining us, the Polish Pipe Bomb. I'm Steve Zocchi. And for those who are just wondering, some shows you have like a good five-minute buffer. Sometimes they'll do sports updates, so it's a little seamless. It's a little easier to do a seamless transition. With us, Mike runs right up to almost the end of the hour, and there's not much time, and plus when you have guests involved and you're just trying to move a lot of meat in the studio.
Yeah, shuffling people in and out, collecting headphones.
Exactly.
All that kind of stuff.
So sometimes it takes longer than, some weeks it's good, and other weeks it takes a little bit longer.
Yeah, well.
This is one of those weeks.
We're here, we're ready to rock and roll.
And there is a lot of stuff to talk about. You know, we were talking about in the pre-show meeting, some weeks you're like, okay, well, should we talk about this, that, or the other thing? But this week, a lot of news in the world of auto racing, especially on the NASCAR side.
Yeah, and, show kind of writes itself today.
It certainly does. And we're going to start off, well, should we start off? Well, I guess they're both somewhat controversial subjects, but the one I want to talk about is the Busch Clash.
Okay.
For those who might not be aware, they're moving the Busch Clash a little bit earlier into the year to be on the weekend of the 24 Hours of Daytona, which in itself is a pretty hefty weekend, obviously. And that is the traditional kickoff of Speed Weeks. I always get kind of hit my head against the wall when I hear them for ARCA weekend or and the Busch Clash. Oh, we're kicking off Daytona. No, you guys have already been racing there. There's already been a few races on the sports car side, which I mean, last couple of years, they've been getting close to over 100,000 people there.
Yeah.
Just huge crowds. Now, it's a different crowd because because it's a 24-hour race, you're going to be camping out and doing a lot of stuff in the infield, whereas there's not a lot, if anybody, in the grandstands. So it's kind of a different animal. It's a different beast. So it'll be interesting to see how this works out.
Yeah, it is a different animal, but it's very similar because everybody's drunk. And if you're camping out, you got a 24-hour race, you know the cold ones are going to be flowing and you're going to be having a good old time. So while you might not sit there and spend a whole lot of time in the stands, you know that those guys in their RVs got it all on their TVs and everything like that. They're following along on their computers and all that. So, but yeah, they have been pulling in some great crowds for that race.
Did I mention the Busch Clash is going to be run on the road course?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't like it. You know, part of the reason, you know, that, first of all, if I was an owner and, you know, say I'm an owner of a lesser team, and I was surprised because there were like three or four guys that qualified mm-hmm. for the Busch Clash that did not run it this year. I wouldn't run it because you're just tearing up a perfectly good race car for nothing.
Well, here's the caveat. They're going to a new car next year.
Right.
Which we're going to talk about in just a moment here. But so I guess they're going to be running the old cars. So there's nothing worse you can do to tell a bunch of race car drivers is, hey, by the way, this is going to be the last race in this car, so just have at it.
Right.
Because we've seen what happened to that at Las Vegas in the IndyCar series. That was the last race for that generation car before they went to the current chassis that they have now. And so it could get really, really ugly. Now, that being said, let's take a look at the last few Busch Clashes.
They Those were really been, ugly.
They were nothing but demolition derbies. Just cars driving into each other.
Right. It was pathetic, and it was a very it was a low point for NASCAR. It did not showcase any talent, and it was horrible. But you know, like you said, you tell these guys, yeah, this is the last race for this car. Oh God. You know, you're begging for another Ryan Newman.
Well, you're begging for another car to go, I don't know, it just
an Austin Dillon.
I think because of the it having a road course, that may help. But I think, you know, they always talk about, you know, will we have a race in which a car won't finish? This actually could be it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's bad. You know, we've seen how the last few races, the last few laps at Road America, you know, it takes sometimes an hour to run the last 10 laps at Road America for the Xfinity series. It just, you know, because there's so many yellows and full course yellows. You got to get the field all together. Green flag, another wreck. Wait another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Green flag, another wreck. And just people driving into each other, you know.
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster. One of the reasons why I liked the Busch Clash is because it gave the guys a chance to sit there and get seat time and, you know, learn if there's any changes to Daytona, you know, through the off season, and, you know, because they last raced there in July. And so, you know, it was practice and all that kind of stuff, more time in the draft.
I think more than that, though, it was also kind of almost a reward for the fans.
Right.
You know, I mean, because I remember that thing came out in 1980, and it was live on CBS, and that's Buddy Baker and the Gray Ghost, and you were like, it was like a preview, and you're like, wow, this car is really hooked up, and I think it was a Harry Rainier car, and it was like, oh, this is really cool. And it was, I think, just one segment, 40 laps, boom, have at it, guys, and away you go.
Right.
And, okay, and then you had a couple years later, you had the big Ricky Rudd crash. Okay, but it's a single car crash, though. I mean, they weren't taking out the whole field. And then it's just kind of ran its course. You know, how can I say this? I've been involved with a couple of charitable banquets and dinners and that we do. And there's been dinners and different events in Milwaukee for many years. We've had USAC banquets and whatnot, postseason banquets and dinners, and there's a they had a dinner. They used to have a dinner before the Rex Mays Classic in June. That was hosted downtown. That was a big deal. You get a lot of people from all across the racing world, NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, you know, and it was kind of a big deal for a few years, but these dinners and that have a life of only a few, you know, usually about 10 years. I was involved in one locally with Russ Lake, and we did it for about 14 years. And that one was modeled with permission from Dan Cotter, who did one for the Boys Club in Chicago, which ran about 10 years. And, you know, I have a friend of mine that does one in Chicago now, and it's, you know, it's a struggle to get people. It's always a struggle getting the drivers in because even in the off season, these guys are so busy. But, you know, you just wonder, I guess, Jeff, does the Busch Clash, maybe it's just ran its course. I mean, should we just let the thing die? Is there something, maybe do something else? I mean, IndyCar had a thing called the Marlboro Challenge, which they ran at the end of the year, which was kind of similar. They ran it at Laguna Seca, and it was for all the race winners and that for $1 million or whatever. And they did that for a few years, and it kind of lost its luster and went away. So maybe should we just let the thing go?
Well, with the way that the TV ratings were reported for the Clash, you can't, because people are still tuning in for it. And, you know, it's the first race in 2.5-3 months, however the extremely short offseason is in NASCAR. And so people are excited, and people will tune in to watch it. But you know me and road courses, Steve. You know, I want less road courses. I don't want more. And does it lose luster for me? You're damn right it does.
Yeah. And you wonder, so I just wonder, maybe try something else. Maybe try and get more guys involved with the 24-hour race, which they did for a few years. But it would just be one or two guys. Jimmy Johnson did it a year or two. Jeff Gordon did it, I think, twice. I think the most successful one, the coolest one, I thought, was when Dale Sr. and Dale Jr. ran that Corvette.
Right.
And unfortunately, 2 weeks before he died, or 3 weeks before he died. But I thought that was so cool to see. And just the show. And I think it was kind of eye-opening to a lot of the, some of the snotty road racers who thought, oh, they're just a NASCAR racer, just how talented Earnhardt was. And yes, he could ride road courses. He could ride at night, drive at night, and even in the rain.
Right.
I mean, his lap times were right up there. They kind of went through the same thing with Foyt when he came and did the 24 hours in the early 80s at the age of, you know, almost 50. So it was kind of, I thought it was just the coolest thing. And seeing him in an open face mask and that, and the in-car cameras, I mean, that was one of my favorite 24-hour races of all time. And so I maybe try and put an emphasis on raising that race more. I don't know. But you just wonder, maybe, you know, try some outside of the box thinking. Now, speaking of outside of the box thinking, one of the things that came up on NASCAR Reddit, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. brought it up on his podcast, which is they're trying to change the numbers. It's a trial balloon, basically, what it is. And what they are showing is perhaps a different way of, and they've done this before. I'm going to show Jeff the photo of it because he hasn't seen it. Different ways of for sponsor. Guys, this has been done before, and it's been disastrous. ASA, member of the American Speed Association, one of the awesomest series, especially for us in the Midwest. Such a fantastic group of guys that came through that series, your Rusty Wallaces, your Mark Martins, Ted Musgraves, and on and on. And it went through some, you know, different ownership and promotion and that. And I want to say it was in the late 90s, maybe around 2000. They came up with this idea to bring in more sponsors. We're going to put the door numbers on the rear quarter panel behind the rear wheel. And it looks stupid. Now, why this was such a stupid move? Because it was a mandatory move. So if you didn't have any sponsorship, you had this big slab of nothingness on your door with this stupid number on the back.
Yeah.
And series have been doing, I don't understand why these series have hate numbers. Why do they? See, even Series is interested in this. Siri even broke up. Why they hate numbers? We've seen this with Champ Car and CART in the late 90s when they took the numbers off the side of the cars. Formula One went through this. Finally, when this new group came in, they said, what do the fans want? One of the things was numbers. Hey, guess what? We have prominent numbers on Formula One cars. I'll give them that. Formula One has a lot of issues of late, but I'll give them a thumbs up for, hey, at least they got numbers on the car. This thing came out of left field. I don't know why. Earnhardt Jr. hates it. Dale Jr. hates it, as do I. I mean, if they do this, this would be such a nail in the coffin of so many of their core fans, because there is something almost religious about the numbers in NASCAR, and it's always been that way. If there's anything that connects fans more, you see it with the number three, how iconic that number three was. And you go back in history of other cars, whether it's Bud Moore in the 15, Banjo Matthews with the 27, the Wood Brothers, of course, with the iconic 21. Why you would even throw this? It's because, well, I know why, because it's some pencil geek in Daytona that doesn't know anything about racing, got into there, and it's came up with this idea. It looks stupid.
Yeah, I don't like it either, but I do think that the number love has diminished. And the reason I say that is because partly of Austin Dillon running the three.
Well,
and it's not just because I hate Austin Dillon. You know, if it was Kevin Harvick, you know, say he was still at RCR and he went from the 29 to the 3, I wouldn't like it. The 3 should be retired in honor of Dale Sr. And no one should be able to run the 3. You know, RCR should be able to print as many T-shirts as they want, sell the hell out of it. But I don't think that car should be on the track. So I think that the number love has gone down. But like you, I am not a fan of
this idea. Well, Junior brought up a good point. And then we'll take a break here. We'll be coming up with Dennis Michelson coming up in the next segment. But Junior brought up a good point where he says it's even more important now because the livery of the cars changed so much with all the multiple sponsors. The one constant is the number.
That's true.
Whether it's the 88 with Alex Bowman and all the different cars they go through, the 24, and you see it, but you know, boom, you know who it is. Chase Elliott in the 9.
Right.
It wasn't right that Chase Elliott was in the 24. It didn't make sense. You know when it really made sense? Seeing him in that number 9 car.
Right.
So NASCAR, don't do it. Fire the guy that even floated this idea, because he's poison. And this is the problem that we've had with NASCAR, with these stupid ideas. They made so many bad ideas. And speaking of which, another guy who's been doing bad ideas, Brian France, we'll be talking to that in the second part of the hour about that too. So, you know, get rid of this guy, get somebody else, hire a kid that's been a fan of NASCAR from North Carolina or something instead of some guy from Idaho or whatever.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dennis Michelson. We'll talk more NASCAR coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zocchi along with the Polish Pipe. I'm Jeff Orlowski. Of course, I'd like to thank our friends at Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Make sure to check out greatlakesdragway.com and also on Facebook. All is time to get your 2020 season passes. So I'll look them up and get your 2020 season passes and for that you can use all year long. Of course, Memorial Day weekend, Labor Day weekend, big events, and a big, of course, other big events throughout the year, including the truck event that we did last year, Jeff, which blew our minds with the amount of people they had there.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was so cool. And, you know, let's be honest, I'm not Mr. Truck. I've had trucks, I've owned trucks, I like trucks, but I'm not, you know, Mr. Four-Wheeler. But I tell you, I was impressed by some of the vehicles I saw out there. A lot of fun. And just the festival, and just it was just the cool, it was a cool vibe, I like to say, wasn't it?
It was awesome. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about that place, from the hospitality that Roy Henning and, you know, his dad and everybody like that, they make you feel welcome.
It's a comfort. There's a comfort level at Great Lakes Dragway that you don't see at all tracks.
You go to a lot of places, and it's like they're doing you a favor by letting you in the door. Great Lakes does not make you feel like that. They make you feel welcome. The food is great. The drinks are great. It's a great spot. Get your season pass. It is worth the money.
Especially feeling welcome. Here's a guy we love to feel welcome almost on a weekly basis. It is Dennis Michelson from FrontStretch.com at D-Mike Media. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Hey, guys. It's good to be here, and I couldn't even brag as much about Great Lakes Dragway as you guys do. That is one of my favorite places to visit, though.
It certainly is.
For all the reasons that you said. Yeah, for all the reasons that you guys said. You walk in there, and everybody's in a good mood, and they all treat you great. Mm-hmm. And the food is fabulous. So, yeah, that's a place you got to be hanging out all summer long.
Well, Dennis, let's talk about the great fall of NASCAR. They'll be out of the panic. They'll be cease to exist as a series in a couple years because, yes, they've gone to a single lug nut in the Cup Series.
Yeah. You know, this is just terrible, but you got to remember that, you know, there've been a lot of great racers who have been able to succeed in racing with one nut. And you know, Lance Armstrong, for one, is a classic.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
The only thing I'm going to miss is that iconic sound of five on, five off. You know, because when you're down in the pit area or you're watching on TV.
Dennis, I don't know. I don't know if it's because of my age or as I get older or what, but that really irritates me. The whining, it's a pitch that I know some people really love it. I just never have been a big fan of it. I'd rather have the low torque wrench of the single nut, but that's just me. I know people go, oh yeah, he's the IndyCar guy, this and that, but I don't know. But
here's my bigger concern with this car is I would like to see them during this off season or even in the fall do a couple of exhibition style races with this new generation car, this next gen car. Because I would like to see it in action for a few exhibition races, even if it's just half a field, like 20 guys out there, just to get a feel for what this racing is going to be like so they can tweak it before they get to using this car full time. Because the last time they brought a car in, it was a complete disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But the only good thing is they were only using it for like 8 races, you know, for the first couple of seasons. So
right.
You had a chance to see some good racing while they were working out the tweaks. Here they're going to be making a lot of radical changes all at once. I'd kind of like to see this car in action for a few exhibition races just as a shakedown cruise, even if it's just at Charlotte and, you know, like Martinsville or Bristol, tracks that are close by, or even take it to another track close by. Take it to Rockingham and put on an exhibition. I don't care where you do it. Just put on a couple of exhibition races. idea of what all of these changes are going to mean to the racing.
Doing in Nashville to raise money for the tornado people.
That'd be a great idea, too.
They should hire Jeff instead of that idiot that came up with this number idea down in Daytona. That's a very good idea. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so this single nut thing makes a lot of sense, though. There, for those who may not follow it as closely, NASCAR is going from a 15-inch to an 18-inch wheel. The tires are going to have a lower profile, something more akin that you actually see today as opposed to that real thick, big, they talked about in Days of Thunder with you only have 8 inches of rubber underneath you per corner as opposed to a sprint car when he was talking to Cole Trickle. But anyways, I think it makes sense. They're going to a new car. Let's start to bring racing into the 21st century. They finally got rid of the stupid carburetors. People learn to move on. I just think, though, you have to draw certain lines in the sand. And like the Junior said very eloquently on his podcast this week, you know, I don't want, you know, we don't have to die in this mountain about the single nut lug nut, but the numbers thing, I don't know if you heard me in the prior segment, Dennis,
this
trial balloon, that is a deal breaker. They cannot do that. If you want to move it, like Junior said, it's okay to move it between the tires. If you want to move it back a little bit, when you see, you know, you see a lot of, you'll see that on super late models or late model cars. Sometimes they move it back and forth a little bit. If you remember the iconic Dick Trickle purple Mustang, you know, the 99 in that car was just in front of the rear wheels. That's fine, but don't do anything weird. Don't make them smaller. It's fine. But Dennis, what do you think?
Well, in this day and age, where you're changing paint schemes on a semi, almost on a weekend to weekend basis. You need the number on the side of the car to identify who the heck is driving it. And I don't like getting away from the numbers on the doors. That's like tradition as far back as you can go. And in stock car racing, I don't know. Change for the sake of change never makes sense to me. There's plenty of places on a car to sell the advertisement, including on the doggone roof. The numbers on the roof only were there because you had people up on the spotter stands, you know, up in the press boxes that were doing scoring. You needed to have that number on the roof. So that advertising space instead, you don't need the numbers on the roof to identify cars when you got electronic scoring anymore. That's where I would make the change if you want to add advertising space. But this whole change for the sake of change thing in the sport is getting crazy. You also mentioned the Busch Clash. I have no problem getting rid of that race because it's turned into a crash fest. The race only started because CBS needed a way to practice doing the Daytona 500 coverage. And they also wanted to have an event to hype the first live flag-to-flag Daytona coverage. It turned into a tradition that's been with us for 41 more years. But if you do away with it, that's fine. Just don't call a road race a Busch Clash. That's like moving the Southern 500 to California and still calling it the Southern 500. It would make as little sense. So come up with a new name, you know, the Busch Challenge or something else. I've been on that case, though, about that race ever since they stopped making it special for the pole winners. That was a pole winner race. That was something you had to win your way into. Just being the biggest star of the season or of the series didn't get you into that race. There were years that Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt didn't compete because they didn't win a pole. So that was supposed to be something special. They stopped making it special years ago. But that's why that race started in the first place. Let's not pretend that this is some almighty event that needs to be held to promote the Daytona 500, because it kind of promotes itself at this point.
talking to Dennis Michelson on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. And coming up in the next segment, we'll be talking from the documentary Uppity. We'll be talking with Willie T. Ribbs, Hall of Fame race car driver. So looking forward to that. Dennis, one more question. Of course, the Cup Series and Xfinity Series is in Phoenix this weekend. And I smile on my face and I thought of you when they were talking during practice. Yes, it's the small spoilers. Normal spoilers are back. Proper spoilers, I guess, if you want to call them, are back in the Cup cars. What do you think about that, Dennis?
Well, I don't know. You know, the idea is to not have that drag on the cars and to take away a little bit of the downforce. I don't have a problem with that. I would like to see on mile and smaller tracks them open up the wheel wells again, mm-hmm. like they used to back in the day, because then guys could actually make contact with each other. They could beat and bang without ruining their day. That's the bigger change that they are avoiding. Ever since they went to these tight wheel wells on the smaller tracks, on the 1 mile and smaller tracks, the Phoenix is a mile, but it races like a short track. Ever since they went to the tighter wheel wells, these guys don't make contact anymore. And that used to be guys leading on each other at Phoenix was a regular thing back in the day before they changed the way that track raced. So that's the bigger thing to me, but I'm glad they gave them more power. Like they take away power at the intermediate tracks. They've got more power, less downforce. That should be a good recipe for better racing.
I'll do one more question with him. Why don't you make sure you get him on the phone? Dennis, did you see the ARCA race last night?
I missed the ARCA race last night. I was out and about.
I was kind of surprised. I don't know if what the deal was. If they have you noticed the direction on some of the Fox broadcasts, some of the camera angles and whatnot. They've been switching when they shouldn't be switching, or I don't know. I just seems to be a bit to be desired. What do you think?
They're trying to go for the artsy thing, the artsy look of racing. But sometimes in auto racing, it's the simple things that are better. I mean, they're trying all these newfangled gadgets and the drone and all this kind of stuff on race broadcasts this year. Do fans really care about that, or they want to just see good racing and good race coverage? I think sometimes in the sake of making it look pretty, you take away from what the fans really want. But then again, maybe we're just not getting enough racing, and they're thinking they got to show us some artsy stuff to make us not think about the lack of battles for the lead.
Yeah, I was just kind of surprised at some of the camera angles in that. You know, there's the Sunoco fan, the Sunoco sign was getting in the way of a certain things. I just, you know, you would see a car make a move for a pass, then they cut before they would make, and just certain things like that. I just kind of raised my eyebrow a little bit, but I was just wondering if you noticed it. We'll talk more about that ARCA race coming up in the next hour. Kind of a surprise there at the finish, so I wanted to touch base on that. Dennis, thank you so much. We certainly appreciate coming on the show. Looking forward to chatting with you next week.
All right, guys, and we're looking forward to doing some more coverage of Milwaukee sports on D-Mike Media. You guys have a new pro team in town, the Milwaukee Monarchs Women's Ultimate Frisbee League is coming to town, and we'll be filling you in on that throughout the year as well.
All right, very good, Dennis. Thank you so much. I was Dennis Michelson on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
Coming up next, we'll be talking with Willie T. Ribbs. Coming up next on The Final Inspection. Okay, welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Moving along here, Steve Zotke along with Jeff Orlowski, and joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from Willie T. Ribs, Uppity, the Willie T. Ribs story. Of course, it's a documentary profiling the driver who challenged racial barriers in American auto racing, becoming the first black driver in the Indianapolis 500, on a fantastic documentary that is available now on Netflix. Willie, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you.
And,
are you up in Milwaukee? You're in Siberia, right?
Yes, we are in the upper Midwest, which surprisingly, we might get an early spring this year. It's in probably going to be in the 50s today. So
yeah, we're going to have to pull them groundhogs out and inspect them.
So how are things in Texas, sir?
Good, good. I'm getting ready. I'm heading to the ranch for practice.
For those who may not be aware, Willie's son, Theo, is a world championship shooter. And how did that come about?
Well, a lot of the race drivers, when I was racing Andretti's, for example, Murray Hall and a few others, they liked to go out and golf. That was their recreation if they weren't driving. Golf is way too quiet for me. Anything I do, I want to hear some noise. I mean, no matter where it is, in the bedroom, in a race car, or shooting a shotgun. So that was my hobby. I didn't, you know, I grew up shooting with my grandpa on the ranch and hunting quail and pheasant. And when I retired from racing, I started clay shooting, and then my son would go with me as a little kid and push the buttons when we were practicing. And he started shooting when he was 9, and by the time he was 14, he was one of the top juniors in the world. And then he became junior national champion, then K Cup national champion after he was 21, and now one of the top shooters in the world. In fact, he's won his first two events this year in Florida, and just recently last weekend in Georgia.
Excellent. Very good. And for a guy who's been out of racing for a few years, the last few years have been just incredible. I guess it started with Adam Carolla and Nate Adams, who did a documentary on Paul Newman, in which you were part of. And from that, this documentary came about. And when we mentioned this last time you were on the show, you kind of stole the movie a bit on that Paul Newman, on how Paul helped you with your career in that, and your attitudes that he was able to show you and kind of warn you of the pitfalls was certainly a compelling story. And Nate Adams, who I've got to know over the last couple of years, fantastic, talented producer and director, put together this documentary. Kind of walk us through how they approached you on that to do this one, Uppity.
Well, when we were done with the Newman project, Adam Carolla contacted me and said that, you know, you got a great story and the world needs to see it. And so I said, on one condition, we tell the truth and we're not going to sweep anything under the carpet. It's going to be the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the ugly is going to get their butts hurt. And as my grandpa used to say, that's why you got a butt. So we did the film, and it's been worldwide. We were number one on Netflix worldwide for a week. So the response worldwide has been phenomenal. The job that Nate Adams and Adam did, and Tony, their editor, is just, it tells a story, and it's not about racing, really.
Mm-hmm.
Racing was the platform. It was about perseverance and never quitting. And I've got young millennials contacting me crying as to what it meant to them. They in tears that they have no excuse. They have no excuse not to succeed after watching the film.
It certainly is. That's a good point that you brought up.
Okay, Mr. Ribs, it's Jeff. You've raced more in the last few years than you probably have in the last 10 or 15. Did you ever think you'd be back behind the wheel like you are now?
No. I was traveling around the world with Theo, you know, with his competitions worldwide. However, I didn't think I was going to be pulled out of the pasture. You know, I was ready for the glue factory and dog food. And then I got a phone call from Tony Perella, the owner of SVRA, who said that he wanted to put a bunch of former IndyCar drivers and NASCAR drivers together and sort of recreate IROC, but only in vintage cars. So we are now competing in VROC, which is Vintage Race of Champions, against Alan Sir Jr. and Bobby Labonte and Mike Skinner and Max Pappas and Paul Trey. The lineup for VROC is actually bigger than the IndyCar series today.
Anything with Paul Tracy makes it bigger than life, doesn't it?
Well, you know, something's going to get knocked over. right. So I always called him Dick Tracy, because he was Mr. Excitement. And you know, we're not as fast as we used to be. It's like any former great basketball player. They've lost some feathers. Well, we lost some feathers. But the fan response has been insane. And, you know, we're racing at Road Atlanta in March this year, the end of March, and then Indy in June, Father's Day weekend, then Virginia in September, and then final, which is an add-on. We were only doing three races. Now it's four. And Texas at COTA, the Formula One premier racetrack here, has got the finale.
And what's next for you, Willie?
It's happening every day, something new.
Right.
We were speaking engagements, and I'm working now with Scott Bruschetta, who was Taylor Swift's former agent and manager. In fact, he discovered Taylor Swift. So Bruschetta's got a laundry list of things that he's getting me involved in.
He's a neat guy. A funny story, real quick. I'm at a party at the Indianapolis Motor Museum, and my friend is there, and his son is there, and at that time his fiance, and we mentioned Scott, and she like, what? She's like, yeah, we were talking to him about a vintage IndyCar that he was restoring, and he was looking for some help on and parts and whatnot, and she is just melting. She's like, oh my God. She was an amateur singer. She does singing on the side. And then she explained, I didn't know at the time. I knew he was involved with Big Machine Records and that, but I didn't know how involved with, you know, American Idol and all the other thing. So we brought her over there and introduced Scott to her, and she was just a bowl of jelly the rest of the weekend. A lot of fun. But he's a neat guy, owns a fabulous bunch of vintage Indy cars, mainly Dan Gurney Eagles. And of course, Dan Gurney, you had the pleasure to race for him in the 80s in the Trans Am series. Just a last question real quick. Give me a good Dan Gurney story.
Dan Gurney was the master of sarcasm. And he used to have titles for like General Motors, he'd call it. Generous Motors. he was just phenomenal to work with, and because he understood. He understood what a driver wants, not out of a car, but wants out of himself. And Dan was not one of those owners who had never raced before. You know, the owners who never raced before, you know, they're rah-rah, sis, boom, bob bullshit. and you know, get out there and go knock them over, and you know, you just almost like wannabe race drivers or fan, like a fan or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Gurney was exactly the opposite. It was about keeping you cool, keeping you when you were. When he was on the radio, he had the best voice to listen to of any owner I'd ever raced for. Just very smooth and almost unhurried. If you were falling behind, he would tell you why, what was happening, why, and what you needed to do, where you could gain back. And if you were out front, he would tell you just keep doing what you're doing.
Fantastic. Yeah, one of my favorite guys in racing I've ever met, and just a true treasure. Willie, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show, and make sure our listeners get out. If you're not on it, join Netflix and make sure you see it. It's a fantastic documentary, and Willie, thanks again for taking time out being on the show.
Yeah, you bet. Stay warm up there.
All right. Thanks. That was Willie T. Ribs on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit GreatMidwestBank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
We'll be back after this on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi.
Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zocchi along with Jeff Orlowski. That was a lot of fun. Willie T, Dennis before him. A lot of stuff going on. Like I said, this is a... I don't want to say unusually full show, but there's a lot of stuff happening on, including this is a public service announcement. Xfinity qualifying is on now, but for those who have, you know, of course, this is really one of the first best, probably the best weekend for weather in the upper Midwest. You can skip it. No need to watch it. No need to watch the race this afternoon because Kyle Busch is in it. So
right.
Just be warned ahead of time. Unless you're looking to take a nap or something, then fine. But other than that, it's going to be ugly. Now, which I should be careful of that because last night we had an ARCA race. It was a combined race between the East-West, I guess the big ARCA series, whatever, at Phoenix. And Ty Gibbs was in it. Ty Gibbs, of course, driving a JGR car. Is probably most superior to anything else in that series, ran away with the race. Now, Venturini Motorsports is probably overall one of the better teams in that. Was kind of staying, you know, just being there at the end. And if pretty much for the first, you know, there were some incidents, cars spinning and whatnot. And then there was an incident late in which through pit stops in that, Chandler Smith was able to get ahead of Ty Gibbs, and then with his teammate Venturini, teammate between him, was able to pass and get in front of him, and it was Ty Gibbs did not win, and he was not happy about it, and said so, and so here it is. It's locally probably 8:30, almost 9 o'clock at night. He's on pit road. It's dark out. He's wearing his sunglasses. I'm sorry. He just looked like an idiot.
Yeah, he did.
And I know he's 17. You know, I shove a microphone in my face on TV when I was 17. Let's put it this way. He didn't really endear himself to many fans last night.
No, he didn't. And you got to be smarter than that. Even at 17, you know that, you know, half of your job, if you want to be, you know, move up to the Cup Series, is PR, and you have to be good at it at a young age. And I understand, you know, these guys trip over their words and stuff like that. That's fine. You're young, you know, you're 17. But to sit there and with the shades on at night and all that is just a bad look.
Yeah, I mean, it visually, though, it's a little troubling, too. I mean, because you got a kid who's 17. He looks like he's about 12.
Right.
And he's complaining and bitching on TV. And, you know... I know, okay, boomer, you know, if you want to say, even though I'm not a boomer, But, you know, if, from a sport that has Buddy Baker, Dale Earnhardt Sr., and these
tough guys,
there's not a lot of tough guys in NASCAR anymore, is there?
No, there's not. You know, you look at, look at who's running the Xfinity race today and see how many you actually think have facial hair.
All right. So that's one of the things. Unfortunately, it's part of the game now. You know, it's a younger series and whatnot, but what are you going to do? Let's take a quick break here at the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll be talking to Fast Eddie Lapine, who's down in Jacksonville at Amelia Island. A lot of news there, too. So we'll talk to Eddie coming up next on the Final Inspection Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.